Welcome to Family Talk.
There's a way to find true strength, peace, and happiness. And on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, best-selling author Anthony DiStefano will show us how. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson. And as I just mentioned today, we're going to talk with Anthony DiStefano about his book, A Travel Guide to Life. One of our goals is to help families and individuals flourish in the life God has for them on earth, and today's program will help all of us with that end. Anthony DiStefano is the best-selling author of many books, a TV host, and a well-known speaker. He's also an avid pilot, successful businessman, and longtime pro-life activist. Specifically, Anthony has worked with Father Frank Pavone, the National Director of Priests for Life, for over 20 years now. And as I mentioned a moment ago, he is the author of a book that comes out in paperback today titled A Travel Guide to Life, Transforming Yourself from Head to Soul. Now, for those of you who won't be able to stay with us throughout today's program, let me share something with you very quickly. Thanks to the offer of a matching donation from one of our friends, every gift we receive this month, up to a total of $200,000, will be matched dollar for dollar. That means your donation today can make a real difference in the lives of twice as many families. And to say thank you for your gift this month, we will send you my dad's latest book, Your Legacy, and the corresponding DVD from the brand new Building a Family Legacy film series. To join the mission of Family Talk and to impact twice as many families today, visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. Let's jump into the program now. Here is Anthony DiStefano on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Anthony, thanks for being here today. You've come all this way with your brand new wife, Jordan, who is not going to be on the broadcast, but she's sitting over here. And your father-in-law, good friend of ours, Jerry Horn, is in the booth. You know, let's get a little of your background first. How did you arrive to where you are today? Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? You're a prolific writer. You've written a ton of books. My dad and I have recorded one of them for Easter called The Donkey No One Could Ride. Give me a little of your background.
Well, I come from New York, mm-hmm. which your listeners will be able to immediately tell. Usually people, a second after I meet them, they say, you're from New York.
And New Yorkers have an accent?
I'm actually from Brooklyn, so I try to keep the accent down a little bit. I spent my whole life in New York. I'm still there. And I did not have a very spiritual, religious background. I went to public schools. I wanted to be a doctor. I grew up in a kind of a secular house. We didn't go to church. We didn't do a lot of praying. We didn't read the Bible or anything like that. So, I came a little bit late, somewhere in my 20s, to really being committed to my faith. One person in my family happened to become very faithful, started going to church, and as often happens, one person brings everybody else along. I was the next person, then my brothers, and then my father and mother, and now the whole family is very spiritual. But I had many different jobs, none of them associated with writing or with the church. I was in politics. I was a writer for newspapers, things like that. And then, somewhere in my 20s, I got involved in the pro-life movement. Mm. And I worked with an organization called Priests for Life.
Yeah.
Once I started working in the pro-life movement, that's when all these other amazing things began to happen. I started to write books, started to go all over the world, started to meet all great leaders like Dr. Dobson and so many others.
How'd you get involved in the pro-life movement?
This same person in my family who brought me along to the faith, my sister, she said, you have to come to this church and hear this preacher. He happened to be a Catholic priest named Father Frank Pavone. Mm. And I went just to hear him speak.
Anybody who knows who that is, you didn't need any other explanation on how you got involved in the pro-life movement. If you're a young person, if you're anybody and you've heard him preach on the sanctity of human life and the fight for life, that will be transformative. But a lot of people don't, so.
Well, he wasn't even involved in the pro-life movement at that time. He was just a parish priest.
Wow.
And he was very young, just right out of seminary. Hmm. But he was the same vigor that he preaches about abortion today. He was preaching the word of God then. He's been called the greatest a Baptist or evangelical preacher in the Catholic Church. And it was amazing to hear this kind of preaching in that little church. And I was just bawled over that, here's this young guy who was so different, on such a different path than me. And I actually made an appointment to go see him to ask him some questions about the faith and to see what he had, if he had any advice for me. And he immediately recruited me to be in the pro-life movement and to help out with some of the life chains that were going on in Staten Island and the protests at abortion clinics. So he sort of pulled me into that world, the pro-life world, and I've never left. So blame it on him.
Well, it's a great one to be in, and you've done so much, and we just adore Priests for Life.
Thank you.
Long before evangelicals got into the pro-life movement, Catholics were there. And really, we have taken a page out of the Catholic book and love working with Catholics in this movement because they've done so much. They've been there from day one. There's an abortion clinic in between my house and my parents' house. So when I drive there, I pass it. And every day, rain or shine, doesn't matter how hot it is, how cold it is, there are families out front praying on the street. And I've said it on the air before, I'm going to say it again today. My son and I, from the time he was a tiny boy, he would say, "Daddy, who are those people?" And these are loving, caring people. It's not graphic. It's not vulgar. It's not yelling and screaming. It is prayer. The signs say, "Pray to end abortion." The signs say, we will love your babies. It's beautiful. It really is. And I say, "Well, Lincoln, those people love babies." And I remember him being, maybe Lucy's age, maybe three, and giving me that look that kids give you like, "Well, duh, doesn't everybody love babies?" And I'll never forget that moment. I'll never forget it because someday I'm going to have to say, "I'm sorry, no, not everybody loves babies." And that place doesn't love babies. And I'm going to have to tell him what goes on there, which is why I'm in that pro-life fight, because I want to make it so I don't have to tell him that. I don't want those places to exist anymore.
We know that God brings good out of bad. Mm-hmm. That's one of the core beliefs that we as Christians have. And one of the great goods that's come out of the pro-life movement, and abortion is such a great evil, institutional evil. One of the great goods to come out of that is the working together of all the different faith traditions within Christianity, and the centuries-old animosities, being wiped away. We work with brothers in the evangelical community, in the Baptist community, all Assemblies of God, you name it. We're closer to each other because we believe so deeply in the Word of Christ. Then we're closer to those denominations than we are to those in say the Catholic Church who are cafeteria Catholics, let's say. So I think that's something we all can relate to, this great good that's come out of this.
And there's been so much good that's come. I came out of it. I got to be honest. I'm an adopted baby. My birth mom was 17 years old and had a bunch of brothers and sisters and didn't need another mouth to feed. And because there were people in the pro-life movement when I was a baby, because there was an adoption home, there was an agency that helped those girls and helped my biological mom back in the day, I'm here today. And so, people say, how did we get you to come here? I'll speak at a pro-life banquet. And I just say, well, somebody called, because I always answer, this organization saved my life. There's nothing I can do but join into it. And I love that you have. I've enjoyed a lot of your books. This one I'm reading now, it comes out in paperback today, which is fantastic. That's a huge accomplishment. It is called A Travel Guide to Life, Transforming Yourself from Head to Soul. One question I like to ask authors is, writing a book is a huge pain. I've written a few. I've watched my dad write, 40, 50 books, with rewrites and new versions over 80. It's hard to do. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort, a lot of energy. It breaks your heart oftentimes. The marketing of books doesn't always go well, and you've put all of your life into it. Why write this book? Why did you have to write it? Because people that write a book have to write it. It's not something they just think, maybe I'll try. You write a book that's substantial. It's something you have to do. Why did you have to write this book?
Well, that's a great question. And this particular book is meant to be a corrective on the whole personal development industry. Now, I'm a fan of self-help. I'm a fan of personal development. And if you go into any of the bookstores, you'll see there's whole sections devoted to, you know, these inspirational books. And, you know, in many ways, they're good. They teach you to set your goals. They inspire you. They're very, very good. But there's a real big, big problem with these books. They're all about self-help, and they're not anywhere about God's help.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, all of them break down at a certain point. And that's why you see these celebrities and these rich people and these all kinds of very, very successful people who have achieved this incredible success in life. And they wind up committing suicide, or they're tremendously unhappy, or they have all these, seven divorces and all these terrible family problems, and just miserable. And yet they were very successful. Well, they used all those principles and self-help and personal development industry, but they still wound up coming to a dead end. And I thought there needed to be a book that combine the best of these personal development books, the best of them, because they do have value, but at the same time corrected that whole philosophy by putting the emphasis squarely where it belongs, and that's on God and His help and how He can transform your life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the subtitle is Transforming Your Life from Head to Soul, you know, because this has to do with our spirit. It's not just, you know, getting money.
Definitely. I think what captivated me when I first started reading it, the first section of the first three chapters is called Wake Up. And I was watching one of the videos you've talked about online where you talk about people just going through life asleep. And the way I say that is the path of least resistance. You know, you ask people, I speak at a camp all summer long, and I ask the kids, how many of you guys are going to go to college? They all raise their hands. I mean, there's 180 kids per session. Maybe one or two don't. But it's maybe, usually, all the kids raise their hand. And I say, why do you go to college? And virtually every kid answers, to get a good job. And I say, awesome. What does it mean to get a good job? Virtually every kid then answers, make a lot of money. And I stop right there and I say, really? That's what a good job entails. That's the only thing that entails. What if you hate your job? What if you just despise your work every day? You make $1 million a year. Is it worth it to be miserable for the majority of your life every single day? But that's the path of least resistance. That's what we've been told. That's what you do. You go to college, you get a good job, you make some money, and then you get married, and then you have kids, and you do these things. And I think, I look around and I think, well, we've kind of lost our way. Maybe money is not the ultimate end of a good job.
Yeah, and of course, the ironic thing is that most of these people don't wind up becoming millionaires.
Yeah.
They don't. If they got jobs where they were making so much money, at least they'd be able to say that. They're unhappy, but they're making money. So many people today, you know, they can't pay their bills. You know, they're stressed out and they hate their jobs. So now, and their family lives are breaking down, and they don't have it. That's why they're walking around like zombies.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought, a mistake at the beginning is the biggest mistake you can make, you know, because everything else after that mistake gets screwed up. And it's very hard to correct when you're midway through, which is the problem that many of us have experienced. We get halfway through life and we say, what? Why am I miserable? And then we don't know how to fix things. So I said, let me write a book that tries to show people how to get it right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. One of those other things in that first section, it's chapter 3. It's be honest about yourself. Anthony, I have waited for someone to write that chapter. I'm thinking about writing another book. I don't know. I have a love-hate relationship with writing books.
Me too.
But that be honest with yourself, I wrote my last book, Wanting to Believe, and that's one of the key tenets. I didn't address it in there. My wife brought it up afterwards. You have to be honest with yourself. If you can be honest with yourself, there's almost nothing you can't do. But I just walk around. Do you meet the people that are disillusioned or...
living in self-denial, self-delusion.
Yeah. Do you meet the people that are in denial about their life? I mean, I see them on TV all the time. You'll see someone, and I don't do this to single out one group, but we have a problem in society when you have medically, morbidly obese people saying, I'm fine. I like the way I look. I feel good. I consider myself healthy, and you should accept me for exactly how I am. And I think, but you're not. There's not a doctor on earth that would say you're healthy. You're going to cause all kinds of pain in your life. It's going to be harder on your family, harder on your kids, harder on you. It's harder to get a job. It's harder to get up in the morning. You die earlier. You have all kinds of infirmities related to that. But these people are in denial.
You know, it's a big problem because people, human nature is to want to go towards pleasure and to avoid pain.
Mm-hmm.
And facing these, you know, truths about ourselves is often very painful. And what happens, though, is we have to face them eventually because they catch up with us and they cause all kinds of problems. And that's what's known, and I'm not the first person to say this, other people have called it a pressure cooker.
Yeah.
You know, we live our lives in a pressure cooker. You know, we're doing these things that are unhealthy, like, for instance, eating badly or doing things with financially mismanaging, not saving, whatever. Pick any area of your life, and you're doing things the wrong way, but it's too painful to change. And so you just let it build and build and build and build. But then it gets to a point where if you don't do something about it, it's going to explode.
Yeah.
The pressure cooker's going to explode. So then what do you do? In order to avoid that massive pain of the explosion, you start taking tremendous action in order to rectify the problem. And guess what? It works. It works. For a while, it works. The pressure goes down. But then what happens? The pressure goes down, and what's the first thing you do? Then you ease up. You relax again.
Yeah.
And then it starts to build up again. And I, you know, there's got to be a better way.
Definitely.
You can't just live in a pressure cooker. That's not a happy way to live.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my dad had a heart attack. You know, he was exercising, he was playing basketball, he's having fun with his friends, you know, he's doing that. But he was eating poorly. And he'll say that. He's like, I grew up in the South, ate fried food, you know, loved donuts, ate poorly, and then had a big, massive heart attack, almost died. That was a big change for him. And it became a lifestyle. And honestly, you add that element into the book of the spirituality. It's transforming someone from head to soul, that inner part of you. For him, when he had his heart attack, it was a big wake-up call. He said, I've got a wife. I've got kids. I've got a ministry. I've been called to speak for the Lord to the family, to help families. And if I continue to live my life this way, I won't get to do what God's called me to do. That spiritual aspect came in. And today, 78 years old, he eats healthy every day. He works out every single day because he made that spiritual change in his life.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of people listening now may not have problems with, say, obesity, but they may have some moral problems that they're not being honest with themselves about. Another thing that comes from personal development books, which is valuable, I don't know if you've ever heard, you know, we all have three selves. You know, you have your public self. That's the self you show everybody at work. You know, you're on your best behavior, you're smiling, you're joking. Then you have your private self. That's the self that you show to your wife, your kids, and oftentimes it's not the same, you know, happy-go-lucky kind of individual.
Sure.
But then, beyond that, everybody has what's called a secret self. It's what's inside your mind. It's the thoughts that are going through your mind 24/7, that stream of consciousness. And those, and there are things going on in there that you never tell anybody, not your wife, not your kids. You know, it's the darkest part of yourself. And the problem is that if you're not honest about your secret self, if you're not honest about what your shortcomings are, what your inclinations even to evil are, and you're not honest with yourself about your public self and your private self, and there's a big difference between each of these selves, then how in the world can you ever be peaceful or live in harmony when there's this radical conflict going on inside your personality? It's impossible to be happy. So in order to start working on all of those things, you got to first be honest with yourself and admit that you're not so perfect.
Sure. Let's talk about that. Let's unpack it for a minute. You've got someone that's listening right now thinking, I know how I present myself in public. That's one way. I know how I present myself at home. But there is that secret side of me, and I'm afraid of it. And I know the things I'm tempted by. I struggle in this area or I struggle in that area. What are those early steps to being honest with yourself?
Well, to being honest with yourself, that's the habit of self-reflection, you know, and just facing yourself. There's no initial step to that. There's just being honest with yourself. And stop lying to yourself. But the initial way to break out of that is really the core of this whole book, and that is that you have to start putting God first. See, all of these personal development books and the self-help books, they'll tell you to right away start on making goals to yourself and, you know, start exercising and all that, all those things that are very, very valuable. But they're skipping the first step. And the first step is you must put God first in your life. He has to be first. And what I say in the book, it's just a very, very practical step. To put God first in a very practical way is when you get up in the morning, the very first thing you should do is say a prayer to God.
Mm-hmm.
The very first, I mean, when you're still sleeping and you're coming out of that haze and you're still almost in dreamland, the first thing you should do is say, Lord, thank you for giving me another day. Help me to do your will today, you know, and say the Our Father, the Lord's Prayer. Say Jesus' word. Just start the day off a winner.
Mm-hmm.
Right away, then, you're putting God first. And you put God first, and guess what? He's going to put you first, too.
Yeah.
And he's going to give you help to do all of those other difficult things that you need to do.
That's a good step for even the person that doesn't recognize they even have a problem.
Yes.
You know, there's things going on, but they think, well, it's not me. And I think, ask the Lord. Do that. Wake up first thing in the morning. Just thank the Lord for another day. Hey, I've got another day. Thanks for another day, because that means the Lord's still got a plan for you. If you wake up in the morning, the Lord's got a plan for your day. That's a pretty big deal if you think about that. Reflect on that for a while. The creator of all things, I mean, the creator of the heavens and the earth. And the Bible says, through him, all things are held together. Before you were born, I was there. Thinks about you, has a plan for your day today, specifically today. What is it? And ask the Lord. Man, that's a scary thing, though. There are days where I think, I should ask the Lord what he wants to work on me today. And then I think, not sure that's what I should be doing. Not sure that's what I want to do today. But that early morning prayer is a big deal.
And at the end of the day, too.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing you do before you close your eyes, you know, open up that Bible that you should have right there on your nightstand, or in today's day and age, you have it on your smartphone or something, and read a couple of verses of the Bible, something. Close your day with the Word of God. Reflect a little bit. That's one way to, and I don't care what you've been doing before that. I don't care if you've been sinning all day. It doesn't matter. Just do that. Just do it. You know, some people say, I don't want to even think about God right now because I've done things I shouldn't be doing. Nonsense. That's okay. You just read that Bible before you go to sleep, no matter what. You start the day and end the day. That's a step. That's not the whole of the spiritual life, of course. There's a lot more than
that.
But that's something you could, everybody could practically do that to get on the right path.
Definitely. It's what I want to do today. I'm not going to cover the entire book. I want people to buy the book. Comes out in paperback today for those that are just joining us. I know a lot of people don't listen to the entire program. They're joining midway. This is the book, A Travel Guide to Life. I want to add one thing that you've got in the book to morning rituals. I'm fascinated by morning rituals. There's a book called Morning Rituals, and it covers, I don't know, 30 or 40 high producers throughout history and what they did every single morning. It's interesting. Most either didn't have kids or someone else took the kids away in the morning, so they have this very specific, rigid routine. I don't have that. I love my kids. I'm around them every morning. But you've got a chapter called Gratitude, The Secret to True Wealth. This, to me, is one of the most important things. My wife and I started on a journey a couple of months ago, and we pray in the morning. We try to exercise in the morning. But before we start our day, we do something called the 5-minute journal. You don't have to use the 5-minute journal. You do whatever you want. But the 5-minute journal is only 5 minutes. Self-explanatory, but it focuses on gratitude. It starts with an inspirational quote or a challenge, and then it has 3 things I'm grateful for today. That's the first thing you write, 3 sentences. I am grateful for XYZ. And then 3 things that would make today great that are within your power. And they can be anything. Like when I went through surgery, I couldn't exercise, I couldn't do anything. And so I would write down virtually every day, if I went on a walk, that would make today great because it would get me outside and I would get some movement. 3 things that I can control that are within my power that'll make today great. And then a declarative statement about yourself, about something that you hope you can achieve. I'm not very organized. I'm not a very tidy person. So all right, I am organized and tidy because I want to be that person. But it focuses on what I'm grateful for, the things that I have control on in my life, and who I want to be. And as a Christian, there's all kinds of spirituality into that. And then at night, I close it. My wife and I pray at night. We do the 5-minute journal at night because it says, what made today great? What are you grateful for? And who do you want to be in the future? That, the true wealth, the American dream essentially has money tied into it. You know, it's the house with a white picket fence. It's the car. It's those things. But true wealth is being grateful for what we have. Well, I'm excited to continue this program with Anthony next time and dive deeper into what it looks like to live a life of strength, peace, and happiness. We've been listening to an interview between Anthony DiStefano and myself on Anthony's book, A Travel Guide to Life, here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. It comes out in paperback today, and you can find it on Amazon and where all books are sold. I'm Ryan Dobson, and at the top of the program, I mentioned the opportunity to help us reach the full $200,000 conditional match. To donate, call us at 877-732-6825 or visit our website, drjamesdobson.org. And as a thank you for your donation, we will send you two powerful resources to help you build family legacies of faith. They include my dad's latest book, Your Legacy, and the DVD that corresponds from our brand new film series titled Building a Family Legacy. Thanks for standing with us on behalf of the family. Again, donate by calling us at 877-732-6825 or visit our website, drjamesdobson.org. Coming up next time, the conclusion of my interview with best-selling author Anthony DiStefano as we explore what it means for families and individuals to flourish. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you again next time for the conclusion of A Travel Guide to Life, right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.